As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hay Show.
Hello and welcome to the show. The Phil Hay Show brought to you by The Athletic and The Square Ball. Phil's here from The Athletic. I'm Dan Moylan from The Square Ball, along with Michael as well. Michael Normanson's here. You can subscribe to The Athletic to read all Phil's stuff on the site. Loads of stuff about Leeds, loads of stuff about the Premier League, sport around the world as well. TheAthletic.com/LeedsPod. Pound a month for 6 months. TheAthletic.com/LeedsPod. It's normally the case during the summer, Phil, that we find that what we talk about on this show and the stuff that's on the site is pretty closely related. What's on there this week and what we're going to be talking about on this show?
Monday was 20 years since the sacking of David O'Leary at Leeds, which just goes to show that time really does fly. So for Monday's, the site on Monday morning, we wrote, or I wrote, about O'Leary's book in his last season at Leeds United on trial. I got hold of the guy who, Alan Sampson, who was responsible for publishing it, and chatted to a few other people about, you know, the background to it, why he did it. People remember the controversy involved. And actually reading it back, the detail it goes into is absolutely staggering. When you think of the fact that he was still coaching the players he was talking about in the book, he was still employed by the club. He was referring to so much, and the detail that he goes into about the trial of Bowyer and Woodgate in particular as well, pretty astonishing. So because that was kind of such a big part of the last season and such a big issue in that last season, I wanted to write about that and to tell the story of it. So that is on there if anybody wants to have a read.
We've been speaking over on our podcast about Rio Ferdinand's exit from Elland Road. And in that, we got into the detail of, you remember when Ferdinand went off to the 2002 World Cup and all the Man United players were getting in his ear about signing for them lot. But also Danny Mills was playing at that World Cup and O'Leary was on TV as a pundit, wasn't he, saying he shouldn't be playing?
It was a right old mess. I mean, I remember, I know journalists who were over covering that World Cup who came back 100% certain that he was going to Man United. I mean, it had not really been a secret at all while they'd been out there. But because Twitter and so on wasn't really active at that stage, I think Twitter even existed, did it, in 2002? And there was no kind of spread of social media. This stuff didn't get around in the same way that it would do now. But it was perfectly clear that that's where he wanted to go and where he was going. And I don't know whether the Man United players were so much in his ear as him already decided that he'd be on his way out. And you would have to say that he timed his exit pretty beautifully when it came to getting out of Leeds before it all fell apart. But I think the fascinating thing about the O'Leary book was the extent to which he spoke about his views and his feelings on individual players, you know, the comments he would make about them. You wouldn't go as far as saying disparaging necessarily, but very, very forthright and very frank. The sort of stuff that I think, as I read it and I got further through it, it felt like you were reading a memoir written by somebody who had retired 20 years ago, you know, and was able to tell these stories. And yes, okay, there might be some of them that people wouldn't be happy being aired in public, but it's so long ago that it doesn't matter. But this was actually live. And, you know, it was at the time where he was in the job and in the dressing room and huge potential to upset people, which obviously it did. And Alan Sampson, who published it, said, you know, the title of it, Leeds United on Trial, was a mistake for a few reasons. He said commercially, it targeted the wrong audience because rather than going to the core Leeds support, it kind of made headlines for other reasons. And it was just tactless. You know, it was tactless and it did look, at the time actually, and even more so, with hindsight, it did look like it was cashing on what had been a really unsavoury period and a very unsavoury trial as well. So he did say, you know, given his time again, that would not have been what the book was called.
If you want to read that on the site, a very good read, theathletic.com/Leeds pod to sign up. £1 a month for 6 months. And it's funny how these things kind of echo down the ages, isn't it? Because there's one narrative, I don't know if we've just kind of invented this, but about Calvin Phillips, that since he's been going to England and hanging around with the likes of Jack Grealish, they've been getting in his ear and saying, come and play for Man City, come and play for Man City. And that's probably the obvious place to start with today's show, because that one seems like it's front and centre and the one most likely to happen soonest.
Yes, he's been away on holiday, Phillips, and City didn't insist that he came back after they reached an agreement over a fee with Leeds. I'm well aware that pretty much every podcast this summer is going to be in danger of being dated before you listen to it. And by the time this came out on Friday morning last week, they were in the process, Man City, of getting the ducks in a row and getting an agreement with Leeds for a fee, which will be £42 million, and then add-ons of £3 million on top of that. That was announced, or at least the news about it broke last Friday. But Phillips is away, Phillips is abroad, so they haven't been able to push it through ultra quickly, and there was no demand or insistence or expectation that he'd cut his holiday short. So he's due back pretty much as we speak. We'll start to see movement on that very, very quickly now, with Darko Gyabi, 18-year-old midfielder from City, coming in the opposite direction. Not part of the same deal, but will be done at the same time. And it is goodbye to Phillips, barring anything going wrong with his medical, which I'm sure it won't. That will be him off to the Etihad, which, if we're being honest, is probably about the best move out there for him. I find it personally, you know, all things considered, quite hard to begrudge him that. I think they've had unbelievable service from him. He's done very well out of being at Leeds too. It's worked for everybody. I suspect the fee could have been slightly higher. I think had it been 50 or thereabouts, you'd have said that's bang on the money. But actually, given that there is only one club bidding, because I don't think PSG were ever serious about him. He has 2 years left. He's 26. I don't think 42 with potential add-ons of three is a terrible deal.
But Leeds claiming 50 to 55, though.
Is in terms of what it could be worth to them, what you always have when players move is you have financial things round about them or round about their advisors or whatever else, which can be picked up by somebody else, or, you know, that there are finances involved that don't necessarily relate to the fee. So in terms of what it could be worth to Leeds, i.e. money that they could save in other areas, then it could be worth more to them in their eyes than the 42 plus three. But in terms of the fee that has been agreed with Manchester City, our understanding of that is that it is an initial fee of £42 million and with incentives of £3 million, which, given how good City are, given how much City tend to win and what they tend to compete for, you would think there'd be a relatively high chance of those add-ons coming in.
Why are there not more people in the market for him?
It's a good question. He's obviously a very specific type of player. And so it comes down to the question of who needs a central midfielder in the mould of Phillips. I do think he'll play differently at City, or slightly differently to how he played under Bielsa at Leeds. He isn't going to be that out-and-out holding defensive midfielder. I think he will play slightly higher up the pitch, but with many of the same responsibilities, just in a different system and a different setup under Guardiola. But quite simply, nobody else seems to have been targeting that specific area and seeing Phillips as the player that they want to go for. You know, the only bit of note has come from City and has been accepted from City. The PSG interest, I said last week, that smelled like a stalking horse to me, and I don't think that was ever serious. I don't know if that was to hurry City along or if it was just a speculative phone call or whatever else, but it felt like it was going to be the Etihad for him from about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and that will be the case.
And things are naturally going to swing into action when we get into the start of the new football financial year, which happens on the 1st of July. That's the date from the start of, you know, contracts, commercial deals. Everything goes like 1st of July through to the 30th of June, doesn't it? So we should see everything sort of spark into life, I imagine, in the next couple of days.
Well, for example, Brendan Aaronson and Rasmus Christensen have technically signed for Leeds, but will officially become Leeds players on July the 1st, which is today, if you're listening on Friday. And yeah, you do tend to find that that's the case. If clubs have things that they need to manage in one financial year as opposed to the next, July the 1st can be the point at which things really begin to get going. Although I have to say, it's been a busy month, June. It's been particularly busy at Leeds. Three coming in, one definitely going out, looking like Rafinha, more and more likely to go as well. But things going on elsewhere. You know, Arsenal signing Jesus, Richarlison, I think due to have a medical with Tottenham today, are certainly getting very close to that move. You've had Haaland coming in, you've had Nunes going to Liverpool. There hasn't been much holding back, actually, so far in this window. Sometimes you can find that early on it's quite quiet because it takes time for the dominoes to start falling over, but fair number of clubs have done quite a bit of business.
It looks like Man City are going to sell Nathan Ake to Chelsea as well, doesn't it? For a similar sort of fee, but another 40 million on the table.
Yeah, there just seems to be money out there to spend and willingness by clubs to spend it. Clearly Chelsea have got new ownership who want to be seen to be active. And, you know, we'll speak about Rafinha, but they've got heavily involved in that one, having kept the powder quite dry. You know, the talk has been Barcelona for ages. Arsenal, more recently, seemed to push themselves to the front of the queue, and then Chelsea suddenly appearing. But it comes back to that thing, doesn't it, of needing to advance, needing to improve, needing to keep up. You know, if Liverpool and City were a long way clear of everybody this season just gone, if City are doing Haaland and they're doing Phillips, another signing coming in from South America, and if Liverpool are doing Nunes, and they seem like they're getting stronger, you either let them go or you try and keep pace. And, you know, for Tottenham, for Arsenal, fighting for fourth place again this season is going to mean the need for expenditure and the need for investment. Manchester United badly need investment in their team as well. Everybody's got to do it. And I think everybody is feeling the need to do it this summer. But it is the case once again that it looks like Liverpool and City have got themselves in order quicker than anybody else.
Are we seeing more activity in the market, kind of, because we're now in the sort of post-COVID recovery, like people were a bit spooked about the loss of commercial revenue, no crowds and stuff like that, whereas that's all now coming back into the game?
There definitely was a feeling of that, and every club lost, you know, multi-million pounds worth of income because of what was going on with COVID. And more recently, the threat of COVID has become less problematic. And yes, there were players missing games last season, but the rules of the Premier League have eased on that. The amount of testing that needs to be done has been eased to, far more attention being paid to whether or not players are symptomatic as opposed to simply testing positive. And clearly there's virtually no restriction on crowds anymore either. Your stadiums have been full for a long, long time. And you would like to think that this season coming up, there'll be nothing like the spate of COVID postponements that we had last season when it did make the Premier League a real mess. But in that period where you couldn't necessarily see the end of it and where there was no promise that COVID was going to die down and things would go back to normal, clubs were having to be cautious about what was coming, because it's not as if match day revenue is the be all and end all for them. I mean, television revenue is pretty much what makes the world go round financially in the Premier League, but you do need that commercial revenue, and it becomes harder to accrue it when sponsors and so on see less benefit of doing it. The corporate facilities that clubs have spent a lot of money building up and that Leeds would like to enhance at Elland Road become pointless and worthless when there's nobody in them. So yeah, the game is in, I don't know whether it's right to say the game's in a better state financially, because football never really seems to be in a great state financially, but that pressure, the COVID pressure, has definitely eased.
And in terms of how Leeds are approaching this, there has been a little bit of consternation among the fan base about the fee for Phillips being perceived to be too low. And we probably don't need to retread all that, because it's been said a lot. You know, we said it a lot on our podcast. It's been hammered on Twitter. But do you think the willingness to deal at 42 plus three has been driven by Leeds wanting to just get into the market themselves?
Wanting to get into the market themselves, but I think also the realisation that, you know, Phillips wants to go to City. City are the only club bidding for him. He's never going to be worth more money than he is now without signing a new contract. It wouldn't, I mean, obviously you would keep him next season, so he would help and it potentially help to keep you up again and give you another season in the Premier League. But he's worth considerably less this time next year. And if by selling him you can invest and strengthen your squad, then potentially you stay up next season anyway, but you have additional resources in your squad that you wouldn't be able to fund with a Phillips fee if it was in 12 months' time when his value is diminished. I think the feeling is much the same with Rafinha as well. You know, the fact that this is the point at which his value is going to be at his height, but again, because of his contractual situation. And it doesn't seem like much of a secret that Rafinha wants to go. You know, there would not be this amount of angling for the Barcelona move. There would not be all the discussion with Arsenal and Chelsea if Rafinha didn't see himself elsewhere. So I think there's also a kind of logistical aspect to this for Leeds, in that if it's going to happen, then it really needs to happen as soon as possible. You don't want this still being an issue and a point of discussion late July, early August. If you're keeping them, you're keeping them, and that's absolutely fine. But I think they've come to the viewpoint that Phillips wants to go to City. City are the only club bidding for him. It's a very difficult move to obstruct, so you get it done. Rafinha is slightly different in that there is far more, you know, the multiple clubs looking at him, and on that basis, you might be able to push up the price. I suspect people in the end will be happy with the Rafinha fee than with the Phillips one. I feel with the Phillips fee, it's not brilliant, it's not awful.
from an emotional point of view, you could argue that Phillips is irreplaceable because he's come through the academy. He's a Leeds lad. He's got a mural up in the city centre. From a football point of view, do you think he's replaceable?
I think in the Marsh system, you'd have to say yes from what we saw. I mean, last season as a whole for Phillips never got going, did it? He was in and out of the team with injuries. Even when he was playing towards the end, you got the impression he was either not fully fit or didn't fully understand his role in the team. And it just all seemed very congested for him in the middle. So I don't know. It feels like he maybe has lost his way a bit in a footballing sense under Marsh as well. So whether or not the club actually wanted him for the new system does make me think maybe they would rather have had the money and buy two or three other players with that instead.
I agree with that. I didn't think it looked as if Phillips fully understood the system or certainly wasn't settling into it as comfortably and as quickly as he had the Bielsa 4-1-4-1. And I think there'll be scope in Marsh's team for different types of, you know, deeper midfielders to fit into that. I don't think they're looking for any more that one, you know, line of defence in front of the back four. He's a talented player, is Phillips, and we've done a long read on him, which we'll publish at some stage soon. And, you know, chatting to some of the lads who grew up with him and knew him in the academy, we're talking about the way his range of passing developed under Bielsa and just saying when you watched it in training, it was an absolute joke, the quality of it and the consistency of it as well. That really did come to the fore once Bielsa took over. But the thing I think even more about with Phillips is just his temperament and his character. I've spoken to lots of players at Leeds over the years who have either struggled to cope with being at this club or have said themselves that it's a difficult club to play for, particularly when things aren't going well. And Phillips never seemed to struggle with that. And given that he was a Leeds lad and he came through the academy and it was his club, you know, that's an additional reason as to why it can be tough playing here. But
it's a heavy shirt to wear, isn't it?
It is, but it never looked like it for him ever. He just seemed, you know, he'd have poor games from time to time. But particularly once he started to peak, he looked extremely difficult to ruffle, you know, very unflappable. And that's a bit more intangible than sort of talent and ability. That's quite tough to replace. And that's what they're definitely going to have to find. I think to an extent that's true of Rafinha as well. A player who just didn't seem affected by the white noise around him. You know,
to put it into simple terms, Phil, this is what you get with elite players, isn't it?
You get
absolute unflappability.
Yeah, you do, as well as kind of extreme talent. And I think Rafinha has both of those. I thought it was quite obvious that visibly Rafinha seemed pretty unhappy towards the back end of last season. There were parts of it that he wasn't enjoying, but I do understand that. And I do think that he probably more than anybody contributed to keeping Leeds up last season. It wasn't a great season for any of them, but he was player of the year, I felt, by quite a distance. But yeah, you're right. And this is what I mean. There are talented midfielders out there. There are talented wingers out there. If you have money, I don't think it should be difficult to find a winger who can do good things for you, forward who could do good things for you, central midfielder who could do good things for you at this level. But they need to settle well. They need to cope with the environment. And that is one thing you would say about Phillips, is that he just seemed unflappable always.
There's an argument from an emotional point of view, though, that people, and I guess it's sort of rooted in, you know, why you fall in love with a team and players in the first place. It's kind of childish in its outlook. But people will say, we shouldn't go all in with Marsh and sacrifice Phillips in order to accommodate this system. That's what people don't like, do they? Because they're so attached to Phillips, but then we saw the back end of the season, it wasn't great. So people will kind of rail against it from that point of view, say we should be going all out to keep Calvin Phillips and build a team around him.
But it's nuanced, isn't it? Because City come in for Phillips. Phillips likes the look of the City move. You're talking about one of the richest clubs in the world, strongest side, strongest squad in the Premier League. You could have an argument about that with Liverpool, but you're talking about two exceptional teams. So even in the circumstances where you decide you want to back Phillips or you're going to keep Phillips, is that actually your prerogative? Yes, he's under contract, but he's only under contract for another couple of years. So inevitably, you know, over the years, you'll have seen a lot of talk about this crucial period when a player gets to 2 years to go, because that is the point where the value is still pretty much what it should be in relation to the market. But it's also the point at which you can rapidly depreciate and lose a lot of money if you let it just drag on to 12 months to go or 18 months to go with no sign of an extension being signed. So it has been a bit of a sort of make your mind up time, some of this with Phillips and Rafinha. I think it's less about going all in on Marsh, although clearly they are recruiting players that Marsh would want, Christensen and Aronson in particular. And, you know, you've seen the links to Tyler Adams at RB Leipzig as well. I think that there is a fair possibility of that one. And that's somebody else who Marsh knows extremely well, you know, probably better than anybody else who would be coming into Leeds this summer if Adams was to sign. So they are backing him. But I think with Phillips and Rafinha, it's probably been less about that than it has been about circumstances. And ultimately that decision you have to take of when is the right time to accept the money.
It feels to me like the potential to keep those two and build a team was lost last summer when we didn't invest. And having come so close to relegation this time, and it would essentially have cost us tens of millions of pounds in their transfer fees had they gone. I mean, Rafinha would probably already be at Barcelona by now had he just allowed us to be relegated rather than actually digging his heels in and fighting for us towards the end of the season.
Well, they would both have gone already, and they'd have gone for less money than Leeds are going to earn because of the relegation clauses that were in their contracts. I agree with that. I think the way last season went meant that it was going to be harder than it would have been anyway to have kept both of them. I still think there was a likelihood that had it been a steadier season and, you know, had it been a finish of, say, 12th, 13th, 14th, I think there's still a likelihood that there might well have been approaches for them. City have lost Fernandinho, which is why they need a midfielder. You know, Barcelona just seem to have it all out there for Rafinha and seem desperate to take him on in the absence of actually having the money as it stands, which is just this kind of weird cycle that's going round and round. It is the fact, isn't it, that really good players gravitate towards your biggest, or, you know, for want of a better phrase, I think your more successful clubs. And how long have we been discussing the fact that Phillips might end up elsewhere? You remember Bielsa being quoted last season as basically saying, one day Phillips will leave this club. He will, because Bielsa knows his football and he knows Phillips, and he could see the rise that he was on. And the sad fact of life is that football being what it is, he was going to end up somewhere else where he would earn more money and realistically compete for more trophies. You know, that's as much of what it comes down to as anything else. So yeah, a better season last season would have put Leeds in a stronger position when it came to keeping them. But I think you can tell from the fact that, you know, that there are options lined up, from the fact that Leeds are willing to discuss these deals and are kind of open to it happening, that they've probably had it in mind that they might get squeezed this summer and they might have to do it.
Well, that actually leads me into the question I was going to ask Phil, which was, Leeds would never admit it publicly, Phillips would never admit it publicly, but do you think this is a move that suits everyone?
I think it probably is. That is the basis of the Leicester model that everybody keeps banging on about, is that in the end, everybody wins and everybody gets what they want. Players get to go to clubs who pay them more and you know, where they win more medals. The selling club get a big fee, which they reinvest and, you know, as a result, develop a better or a stronger squad. And ideally, there's no loser in the middle of it. That depends on various things, not least the selling club making sure that they recruit well with the money. That's what that comes down to. And Leicester, at various points, have been very, very good with that. So yeah, you know, these scenarios can work for everybody. I think the people who it or the group that it doesn't necessarily work for at the time is the support and the fan base, because you're losing a player or two players who you really value, who you really rate, and particularly with Phillips, who you can really relate to. I think Rafinha is probably the closest thing Leeds have had to a world-class player coming through the door in the past 20 years. But Phillips was the player that you saw the crowd in, if you know what I mean. He was like the crowd on the pitch, wasn't he? The supporter on the pitch. The person that people could properly relate to. So yes, you know, like 6 months down the line, 12 months down the line, you might look back, could well look back and say that summer actually worked for Leeds. It did, and it made a difference for them. But the aesthetic and emotional effect of players like this leaving is hard. It is depressing. And you can't just pretend that it doesn't matter and that football moves on, because you do get attached to these people.
Do you think Phillips will do well?
I think he will, yeah. I think he will. It's hard to know exactly how much he's going to play. And I don't mean he won't play much. He will be involved, because they're always involved on four fronts, City. But to look at Grealish, since he came in from Villa, he's obviously at a certain place in Guardiola's pecking order. And it did feel at certain junctures that when Guardiola was going for his absolutely grade A team, his strongest team, Grealish wasn't really in it. He was right close to it, but not really in it. Phillips and Rodri, I think, are going to be going at it for that place in midfield. But he will be used plenty. I think technically and physically, he's definitely good enough to fit into that squad. And I just don't think Guardiola would be signing him if he didn't think that Phillips could cope.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
In terms of stuff happening the other way then, Phil, we know that Darko Gyabi is coming in. Have you got any more detail on that, about what we can expect from him, why Leeds have identified him?
He's an 18-year-old who came from Ghana to England when he was about seven and grew up in London. A similar story as a youngster to a lot of your footballers who come through, particularly in the South London scene, you know, loved his cage football, played locally, was on Chelsea's radar when he was around about 10 years old and ended up in Millwall's academy for a while before City signed him when he was 14. And it was a big enough deal that to make national news. It was quite, there was quite a lot of interest in it at the time, and six-figure fee paid for him. It's separate to the Phillips deal. This you assumed when you first heard about it that it would all be wrapped up, but Phillips will go in that direction for the fee we were talking about. Leeds will spend £5 million bringing Gyabi over. He will go into the first team squad. I think he's probably more likely to play 23 games this season than a lot of first team games, and they will need another midfielder as a result of Phillips going. This isn't a direct replacement in the same way as Mark Rocker wasn't, but technically gifted, tall, strong. Everyone you speak to who knows him is impressed by him, thinks he's got a lot of potential, thinks he's got huge amounts of talent. Since that became public knowledge that he was coming and speaking to other people around about it, Leeds have been looking at him for a good 18 months. They've been looking at a lot of players actually at City. They keep a close eye on the academy there because there's so many good players in it and so many players who might be worth having a dabble with at any one time. But yeah, this one should go through round about the same time as the Phillips deal.
It feels like a big fee for someone who's never played first team football particularly.
It does. It does. The club think he's worth that money, but obviously it's going to take time to work out whether he is and how he's going to develop. He is very young. But I was chatting to a couple of agents earlier this week about the under-23s market at the moment, and they were saying that the fees are definitely on the high side this summer. That does seem to be an area where it's pushing up and where you are having to spend more and more to get players out of clubs. It tells you, I suppose, the fact that City want £5 million for him, that they obviously think a lot of him and think he's worth that amount of money. And it's not difficult to find other people who agree, but this one's going to be, I think, a fairly slow burn. Anyone who was at the under-23s game between Leeds and City when City won the title this season just gone will have seen him come off the bench in the second half. They do have quite some crop of development squad players over there, and he's seen as one of the better ones.
It's funny, my sort of frame of reference for this is going back 20 odd years for when we signed Michael Bridges, which was £5 million. And I remember at the time, so this was 1999, going, "Woof, that's a lot of money for a young lad." But I've just pulled his information up now, and he had, you know, 80 appearances for Sunderland by that point and scored sort of 16 goals. It goes to show how things have just shifted, doesn't it?
Everything costs so much money now. It really does. And as I say, it seems quite clear that very good under-23s are becoming more and more valuable, and it is an area of the market where Leeds have invested. It's an area of the market where they seem pretty intent on continuing to invest. Although I think if everything gets sorted out and the paperwork gets done in time, it's pretty likely that Gyabi will go to Australia with them the pre-season tour. So he's going to fall into that group who are pretty much there with the first team, you know, on properly on the fringes as opposed to just being underneath in the 23s group. But I think it will be mostly 23s football for him the minutes that he plays this season, and quite clearly they are going to have to sign another centre mid with Phillips going.
21's football as well, of course, as it's going to be adjusted.
Yeah,
to
I'm going to have to stop calling it 23's. I always thought 23's is quite a weird description for it anyway, but yes, 21's.
And just returning to what we were saying before about the speed at which Leeds are moving then, do they seem, to your mind, to be looking to get stuff wrapped up as soon as possible because they want a chance for these players to bed in the squad, get to know Marsh's system?
They would definitely like to. It's been a little bit of a holding pattern, I think it's fair to say, since Rocker signed, because of the wait to get the City deal over the line should happen very, very soon now. And with the kind of back and forward with Rafinha as well, we haven't touched too much on that. But it's been funny the way in which Barcelona have come onto the agenda, gone off the agenda, and then, you know, back on again in the last sort of 24 hours. And really difficult to tell from this distance, and even from speaking to people in Spain, whether they're just kind of keeping the hook in the water, so to speak, or whether they genuinely think that they can get this done. They are discussing injections of finance, which would help them significantly and would presumably ease the salary cap that they're under with La Liga and potentially give them money to spend on players as well. And it's going to need something like that in order for them to do it. But once Rafinha goes out the door and once the money comes in, you know, from Chelsea or Barcelona or Arsenal or whoever it is that decides to sign him, then that's when Leeds can start moving properly in the market and can make decisions and can firm up their interest in the players that they really, really want to bring in. I think if Chelsea do the deal, you know, a lot of the money will be paid up front, which clearly helps. But it seems clear to everyone that it is Barcelona that Rafinha wants to go to. And it feels as if anywhere else he goes to will be a second choice on the basis that he doesn't think the new camp is going to work out for him. But I mean, Chelsea are ahead of Arsenal in the running. Arsenal bid last week, didn't go close. Further talks for Leeds this week. But they haven't gone to the valuation that Leeds would like, or certainly hadn't last time. Last time I checked, Chelsea have gone further and I think are pretty much in the ballpark that Leeds would want. But it is dependent on Rafinha being willing to accept that and to go to Stamford Bridge.
What's Deco playing at? That's what I want to know. Because we're recording, it's now Thursday lunchtime, 1 o'clock. And in the last hour or so, there's video footage of Deco emerging from the corporate offices at Barcelona and people, Fabrizio Romano, saying that Chelsea are going to have direct talks with Deco today. Can he not just pull his finger out? So do we need to sit him down and have a word with him, Phil?
I don't know Deco personally. He's never been around for dinner. So I don't know much about his personality or what he's like as an
he's
agent.
Just really he's really starting to rub me up the wrong way.
It always happens when players are going out your club.
It was nice that he brought him in, but now he's on the way out. I want him to pull his finger out.
So maybe you're feeling much like Sporting fans did or Rennes fans did when he moved on.
Just hold that thought, because The Athletic, your employers, are now reporting that Barcelona have agreed a deal to sell 10% of their La Liga TV rights for the next 25 years. So does this now...
Well, you see, this is what I was talking about there. It's a group called Sixth Street Partners and this was one of the ways that Barcelona were talking about getting money in. I wrote a piece with Dermot Corrigan, our Spanish correspondent, last month, which, you know, the title of which was Can Barcelona Afford Rafinha? And in it, we were talking about the fact that was one of the ways in which they were hoping to be able to raise some capital and raise some money was by selling TV rights. I mean, the 10% of the TV rights for the next 25 years, you know, that is substantial and that will be worth a lot of money. And little things like that start to make you think maybe actually there is enough going on in the background that could let Rafinha get the move that he wants. So in terms of what Deco is playing at, bear in mind that they've been kind of greasing the wheels for a Barcelona transfer for months now. I mean, it's been spoken about since the early part of the year. It's looked, if not certain, it's looked like the likely outcome right up until the point at which people started to say, well, but what about the money? You know, like how are they going to pay for this? Given that Chelsea seem in a position to do it and it hasn't really advanced dramatically in the last 2 or 3 days, does make you think that there might be some stalling going on. And perhaps it will figure out that in the end he gets what he wants.
The Barcelona deal is definitely the more palatable, because I think, like a lot of Leeds fans, I'd kind of come to accept him leaving, thought the money would be decent, and then when it emerged it was maybe Chelsea, I went, ooh.
Yeah.
But not that, ideally.
Yeah.
Can you go somewhere else, please?
Because I remember when we played down there last season, him dancing and doing the little shimmy at the Chelsea fans, and they were all giving him the fingers and stuff like that. And I thought, good, he's not going there.
Yeah, but you know what it's like. Suddenly then he signs for 65 million. You go, oh, never mind that. No, it's fine. It's all good.
Well, I'm glad that story emerged just as we were talking. We were literally on the topic as...
We should do this 1 week, you know. We should just spend an hour recording as Twitter ticks over and just just see what's going on. But that will definitely be significant for Barcelona's finances, that definitely.
In terms of the structures of the deals, it seems like we want money up front, which doesn't seem to be how we try to buy players. So what is going on there? Why are we skint?
It doesn't tend to be the way in which many clubs buy players. Most deals are structured these days or tend to come in instalments. I don't know about skint as such, but you always need money coming in. And the more money that is there to spend, the more you can use. And given that this is a summer where they do need to redraw the squad and they do need to strengthen significantly, it can't be a bad thing that there's money in the pot, you know, to use there and then.
And we do know that Leeds back-weighted a lot of the initial deals that they made, you know, post-promotion. So the Rodrigo summer, when him and like Robin Koch and so on were brought in, a lot of that was back-weighted because of the effects of COVID that we spoke about before on finances. So they're all now becoming due. Plus, we've since added Dan James and Junior Firpo.
So basically, you are constantly paying out, you know, for installments that are due or bonuses that are due because of add-ons or clauses.
I've just got this horrible feeling everything's on the never never, and now we owe it all suddenly.
That's what I mean. It feels like we're happy to spin our own transfer fees. Like, I think, are we still paying for Helder Costa and Kiko Kassir at the moment in one form or another? And at the same time, we're saying, but if you want one of our players, we're going to need all of that up front.
Mind you, such is the churn with coaches these days that you're always going to, if you're paying for something over 3 or 4 years, it's always going to straddle like two coaching eras, isn't it?
It is. And
so you're always going to end up with some deadwood, is what I mean.
Remember as well that it's now a long time since they've actually sold anybody of note. I think the last outgoing that would have raised significant money, correct me if I'm wrong, would have been Janssen to Brentford, which was around about £4.5 million, £5 million. There's been three seasons since then, and unless I'm missing anybody, it hasn't been a case of sales to fund incomings. So this is different, and these are major deals. I just think that if you get offered, if you have a scenario where you can take the money up front, then you're better to do that. If you look around, there are lists out there of who is owed what by Barcelona at the moment.
God, it's frightening, isn't it?
Quite a lot of money.
They still owe for like more than we owe them for Junior Firpo, I think.
So if you can have it...
They owe Betis, I mean, sorry.
Yeah, so if you can have it in the bank as opposed to on a promise further down the line, that seems preferable as long as you manage it properly.
Yeah, the whole Rafinha thing is tedious, isn't it? Just get it sorted now. Especially if Barcelona have come into some money, get it done, pay properly.
So to go back to what you were talking about, you know, do the club just want to get Phillips done? Do they want to get Rafinha done? There definitely does come a stage where, as a club, you would think to yourself, I don't think this is the case with Phillips because that actually moved pretty quickly. But Rafinha to Barcelona, as I was saying, has been spoken about for months and months. And given the kind of activity around him, there has to come a stage at which you say, right, if you go in, you go in. So let's sort this out and let's get it done. And let's not let it go through so late in the window that it doesn't give us much wriggle room to get on with other things. I think mentally as well, you begin to spend the money, don't you, that is coming in or is likely to come in. You start to think to yourself, well, if we get X amount for Rafinha, then we could sign him and we could sign him and we could sign him. And actually, I quite like the idea of him up front or him on the wing, him in the centre of midfield. You know, the squad could look very different and could look better. And almost like that thing of, you know, when you apply for a job and you go through the interview process, you start to convince yourself basically that you've got it and you imagine what it's going to be like. You know, there's an element of that.
And then that crushing email arrives.
That crushing letter, which we've all had, that says, you know, thanks very much for your time, but yeah, unfortunately. So, yes, but I think, you know, that they are obviously looking at players and there will be some who they'll be thinking to themselves now, actually, we do want them. And if we can get the money for Rafinha, then, you know, happy days.
And plans, obviously, to reinvest, as we've just said there, the ones that they're looking at. I mean, if Leeds pull off what they seem to be aiming at, it's going to look good, isn't it? But are these targets realistic? That the names that have been in the round this week, again, we spoke about them last week, so forgive us if we're repeating ourselves, but Charles de Ketelaere, Cody Gakpo, we know Adams and Kamara are the two that have been named for replacing Phillips. So where are we with all this? And can we get any of them?
The all players that they like, yeah, definitely. I think Kamara would be more expensive than Adams. Adams is probably easier to get out of Leipzig than Kamara is from Salzburg. De Ketelaere, the feeling everywhere has been that he was going to go to Milan and will go to Milan in Italy. But Milan are going through a strange period at the moment.
They're not very rich, are they, either? They've got a lot of money. They've got problems.
And also don't seem that organised this summer, that decisive. So I spoke to somebody in Belgium the other day who said he thought Ketelaere's preference would be to go to Italy. But certainly, you know, speaking to our guys who know the Italian market, they're not quite sure what's going on at Milan at the moment. Gakpo would be expensive. I don't think is the only winger that they're looking at. There's so much smoke around all of this. And I mean, again, this summer been linked with so many players. This is one of those where the money comes in and then you need to see actually where they're going to put the chips, what they're going to do, what they're finally going to get on with. The idea would be that two go out, you know, two of note go out, Phillips and Rafinha, and six come in. So you end up with, you know, better supply numbers, ideally good quality in those positions, and fingers crossed, money well spent.
Spreads the risk a little bit as well, doesn't it, from a Leeds United standpoint, rather than having, you know, say if Rafinha is 60, 65 million, if you then have three of 20, you should in theory feel the impact less if you lose one of those players to injury or whatever.
It would be pretty obtuse, I think, to take £60 million for Rafinha and spend £60 million on another single player, you know, because that doesn't do anything for your numbers. And you have to be really careful that it doesn't become quantity over quality and you don't end up with a large pool of, you know, mediocre ability wouldn't be fair, but, you know, like a large pool where the ability isn't helping you to climb up the table. But I don't think if you've got a decent amount of money in your pocket, it should be that difficult to find players in these positions who will do good things in the Premier League. Not necessarily spectacular or sensational things, but good things.
You've just reminded me of the time our midfield options were Norris, Green, Brown and Tong.
Happy days, as they were known. Yeah.
We had four identical midfielders right across the four. We've moved on, haven't we? We have we've moved on, and it does look a lot more optimistic. Even though it hurts that we're losing talented footballers and we're being reminded of our place in the food chain, it's unfortunate, but that's life. And we don't actually need them to be spectacular world beaters yet. We just need to cement ourselves in that middle tier, don't we? Now,
just get it together again after last season. You know, just settle down, become a consistent side if they can compete better and take out some of that kind of jeopardy that seemed to be there from start to finish last year. The size of the squad should make a difference above anything else. But of the signings made so far, I do really like the look of Christensen. I'm really interested in that one. Aronson, I think, will have plenty to prove at £25 million. I'm not saying he's not worth the money. It's just that, you know, it's a big fee. It is. It's almost a record fee for Leeds. So that'll, you know, the quality of that will have to be proven. Rocker, I again think at the price is worth a look. Definitely, yeah.
There's still risk built. I mean, there's risk in any transfer, isn't there? But there's risk built into the level that those players are being bought at.
Yes, but clearly if you're buying at £10 million, you're sort of mitigating the financial risk because that's not a big fee by Premier League standards. Yeah, yeah, I'll never see any Premier League club sign anybody for £10 million. It's like properly unfashionable. Once you get up to...
I was going to say, even if you're shopping in the Championship these days, it's 20, 25 million to start, isn't it?
Well, your best players coming out of there. You remember the summer that Rodrigo went to Leeds, came to Leeds. Ollie Watkins went for more money from Brentford to Villa. So your top-end Championship players do tend to be horribly, horribly expensive.
It's kind of gone from like Bowen, Benrahma. It's just crept up and up, hasn't it? Yeah.
Rodrigo, of course, is a Championship player.
No.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
So with the likes of, let's say, De Ketelaere and Gakpo, it seems like one of the ideas that's emerging around these transfers is that Leeds can now point to what's happened to Rafinha and say, come in to play for us for a couple of years on the biggest football stage that there is from, you know, from a National League standpoint anyway, in terms of the Premier League, you know, make an impression, you'll be shown around the world, and then you can get your move, which is not, it's not nice for us to digest as fans, but if that pushes the buttons of certain footballers, the chance to come and play in the Premier League, which is a massive, it's a massive pull, isn't it? You know, is that true? Is there some truth in that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that would have been one of the selling points to somebody like Noah Lang last summer, would have been that, yes, we understand that if you are as good as you think you are and if you're going to climb to the height that you want to climb
and
to...
And he does think he really thinks he's good.
He does. then you might ultimately need to do that with another club, you know, not just with us. Likewise with Rafinha. And if you find yourself in discussions where you're being told, look, if you're telling me you're signing me and I can't ever move on, then I'm not interested. As opposed to saying to me, come to us, develop, do good things with us. And, you know, we'll be realistic and fair if you find that there's major, major interest in you from clubs with a lot of money and you know, right at the very top of the game, you know, we'll be receptive to that. Then you do kind of open the door to players who might otherwise not be interested. The Premier League is more and more of a magnet for footballers. If you take Christensen, who could have gone to Dortmund this summer, on the face of it, you would say that common sense tells you to go to Dortmund because you're getting Champions League football, one of Germany's biggest clubs, you know, huge crowd, all this, that and the other. But there is a certain appeal of the Premier League. Leeds have their own appeal anyway. I think it's, Arthur always shows the players kind of this montage of the city and the club and the crowd and everything else. And it won't be difficult to get seduced by that. But there's also a lot of money here. And I don't mean at Leeds specifically. I mean, in the division, you know, there's a huge amount of cash. There's also, you mentioned the word exposure there. Exposure is part of the thing. It's just everywhere. Premier League is everywhere. It's broadcast all over the world. You've got markets abroad, people who never ever go to Premier League games who are obsessed with it and watch it all the time. It's very easy to get yourself noticed if you do well in this division. So at the moment, there's a huge amount of pulling power here, which I think is pretty helpful.
Harry Winks. Let's take a left. God, the tone of your voice, Phil.
Going to be stuck on Winks forever. I mean, it's going to be like Adama Traore.
Well, it was one of those names.
Minus the body oil.
No, it was one of those names that was circulated and potentially put to Bielsa in January. And he said, no, it's just been bubbling under. Because I think it was Graham, the YEP, who reported on three names being in the ring for the defensive midfield role to replace Phillips, Tyler Adams, Mo Kamara. And is it Harry Winks? And would Leeds dare go
super
for
Super Harry Winks. Well,
do you want Harry Winks to go away, Phil?
You can. No, I mean, I've nothing personal against Harry Winks. I mean, he's not been around for dinner either, but I'm sure he'd be as good company as Deco, potentially better. Well, they've obviously looked at Harry Winks before, haven't they? But I don't get the sense that Harry Winks would be the player that they want to come in midfield. It's not, I have to say, it's not clear at the moment what they're going to do there. Not clear who they're going to go for. I think there's enough interest and enough noise around Tyler Adams and also enough willingness on RB Leipzig's part for there to be a lot of potential for that one to come off. I don't think Winks is a bad player. This is the thing. I don't think Winks is a bad player. It's just, it looks a bit to me like the sort of signing that isn't overly as inspired. But then, you know, from time to time, we sort of complain about the fact that some of the transfers that come in at Leeds seem to be kind of not punts, but, you know, seem to be sort of taking a risk or taking a gamble rather than going for, I guess, more known quantities. So we'll see whether or not that grows legs, because we do know that they, you know, they have looked at him before, but I think there are other ones on the list who they prefer.
Just let Frank Lampard sign him.
Well, it does feel like an Everton £25 million deal, that one, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does, especially as they're selling Richarlison, aren't they, to Spurs, by the looks of it. Just a further update on Barcelona, and I know this is a kind of all unfolding as we record, which is exciting. It's like breaking news, isn't it? It's like Sky Sports. It's been reported by the sort of Barcelona media accounts that even with the sale of the TV rights to Sixth Street, they still can't register the freebies, Kessie, Christensen, or Sergio Roberto in Liga, because there's other financial stuff they need to address before it. So they may not be ponying up for Rafinha anytime soon, but we'll see.
It is so wildly complicated, you just cannot get your head around it, which is why it confuses me that Rafinha's, or seems to be, you know, from our viewpoint, seems to be sort of hanging in for this one, given that there do seem to be so many hurdles to clear for Barcelona to start really doing anything, let alone doing big money deals. But, you know, time will tell.
So I'm saying somebody just needs to sit Deco down and have a word with him. Just stop messing
put
about
yourself,
now.
Put yourself forward.
I will do.
Man of reason.
I'll dig his phone number out of my phone. Let's talk about some of the other stuff that's happening then. Charlie Creswell apparently in demand, isn't he?
He certainly will be,
four
yes.
Out. Yeah. Do you think he needs to go out and get that season of football under his belt now?
Well, he definitely does if he's not going to play. I don't see what another season of 23's football does for him. I'd like
21's.
To, 21's. I'm going to spend all week before next week's podcast. 21's. He is not going to benefit from that, really, is he? He looks first team ready to me. I don't mean necessarily Premier League 38 games ready, but he looks first team ready, and he's not going to struggle to find a club in the Championship if Leeds do send him out on loan. I'd definitely be in favour of that if he wasn't going to be, at the very least, second choice right-sided centre-back. Because if he's third choice and Llorente and Cock are fit all season, then there's no looking for him, really, is there?
Do you think he's used the summer to bulk up? Because he was quite a weedy looking chap.
He really is, isn't he? He really is. We all need his fitness plan.
He's been working
his
the doors over the summer.
Muscle mass.
he's a bouncer.
But that's it. You see, you look at him and you just think, yeah, it'd be fine. Sitting in the championship, it'd be fine.
Well, I was going to say, like, he needs to go up against some championship bastards, doesn't he?
He does.
Number nines, right? Because I'm looking at the Papa John's fixtures, for example. We've got, what, Tranmere away for the under 21s in August. September, it's Crewe away. Bolton away in October. What benefit is there to playing in that?
And I think those strikers in the championship will find him to be in the same mould. Mm. You know, I don't think they're going to find him going, don't like this. Yeah. I think they find him getting absolutely stuck in. I loved the interview that we did with him after the West Ham game, where he was talking about Mikel Antonio up front for West Ham. And he was saying, it's bloody hell, you know, like, you play against these guys for the first time and you realise that they're just robots. Like, they just do the right things and the things they're supposed to all the time from the first minute to the 95th. And obviously Antonio scored the winner in that game. And you think you've had a good game against him. You think you've tied it up. You think everything's all right. And there he is, you know, one chance right at the end, bang, puts it away. And it was, he played very well that day, that Creswell played really well against Antonio as well. But I think it was a real eye-opener for him about what you have to do every single week, you know, how consistent you've got to be in every single game. Otherwise, you get punished really, really badly because they're just some quality footballers around.
And as we mentioned, I think it was last week, saying that the example of Ben White is there front and centre, isn't it? As a you know, trajectory that a player can follow who goes from a great season in the championship to, you know, breakthrough season in the Premier League properly, and then you're worth 50 million quid.
And I think if you like...
I'm not advocating selling him, I want to stress that.
Yeah, let's wait till next summer before we have to go around in circles with any more of this. If the club like Creswell and they send him away on loan for a season and he does extremely well for a season, you'd have to assume, or you'd have to hope, that in coming back to Leeds, that he would then get pushed very, very strongly, you know, and pushed forward to the point of saying, look, even if you're not first choice there, you're absolutely banging on the door. Because that's the way it has to work. And I think there will be people looking at what's happened with Shackleton and the sort of kind of unfortunate, and I guess to an extent, slightly unavoidable drift with Shackleton. You know, he was always kind of involved under Bielsa, but just never managed to push himself through, and injuries played a part with that. But I think people will look at the position Shackleton's in now, where he really, really needs a move and you know, probably a permanent one, if we're being honest. And they'll want to make sure that for Creswell, he doesn't go through the same time frame playing as little as Shackleton has. They'll want to knuckle down far more than that. And as you say, Ben White is a great example.
I want Creswell to go somewhere, much like Ben White did with us. We fell in love with Ben White. I want him to go somewhere on loan. They fall in love with him and they can't have him like we couldn't have Ben White.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because I'm vindictive like that.
Yeah.
That's what being a football fan's all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about Shaq then? Is his time up?
I don't think he's been pushed out the door, but I think everybody can see that if he is not going to be involved in a significant way this season, and I don't see anything to suggest that he is going to be a first team regular, then he surely has to play. You know, he's at that age now where he's starting to head towards his mid-20s, and without labouring an old point, it is the Louis Coyle thing I've spoken about before, where I would, you know, interviewing Louis Coyle over at Fleetwood when he was on loan there and saying to him, you know, you're still quite young. And he'd say, well, Sessegnon was on the bench for Fulham at Elland Road last week. He was 16. You know, I'm 23. So I'm not young at all and I need to play games. And that's what Coyle went and did. And he's carved out a really, really good career for himself now over at Hull. I think for Shackleton, yeah, he definitely needs to find somewhere where he's going to be able to be a regular.
We spoke further back in the podcast about the 2 year mark of the contract being a crucial time when you need to start renewing, basically, don't you? And get things swinging into action. We've got a lot of players who've got 2 years left. We've got a lot of the senior pros who came up with the promotion side who have got 2 years left, but a number of them, sort of the younger ones as well. And even like someone like Somerville, Crescencio Somerville's only got a year now.
Yeah, they're speaking to Somerville about a new contract. I think Gilhart will get one as well before the season starts or before the end of the window. Somerville pretty keen to go on loan, I think, and Leeds at the moment, I don't think Leeds have indicated that that's likely to happen, but that'll all be part of the discussion. You're right, some of the older players are starting to wind down. Luke Ayling's got a year to go. There's going to have to be a decision on him at some stage, but he's going to miss the start of the season because of his injury. I don't think he'll miss too much of it, but he will miss a handful of games. The most interesting one is probably Jack Harrison. He's got two to go. There's talk of interest in him from Newcastle, although I don't get the impression that Leeds are really interested in entertaining that at all, unless Newcastle were going to pay really big money or pay well over the odds. Tottenham did have a look at him earlier at midway through last season, but it was a bit speculative and never really came to anything. But he's got 2 years left. So, you know, again, on that one, if you're protecting the asset that you've got there, then you would be extending that.
I mean, that would be wild if they sold Phillips and Rafinha and Harrison in the same window. That would not, I mean, we talked about how things look, the appearances from the outside, that wouldn't look good, would it? Particularly when you consider the involvement in goals that both Harrison and Rafinha gave us last year. They contributed nearly, what, half the goals
The perception of these things always depends on how much money is getting paid, doesn't it? That even for players who you sort of think, oh, we should keep them, there does come a level where you say, actually, do you know what? Just take the money. But I don't get any sense of appetite or interest in selling Harrison, and I don't think Leeds have had any direct contact from Newcastle anyway, so it's hard to say at this point whether that's got anything in it.
Well, we swing back into action in the next week or two, which is great news, playing Blackpool over in your manor, over in York, Bill?
Yes.
Are you going to be going to that?
I will go to that. The first group of players are back in on Monday, testing at Leeds Beckett and have been training this week. There is a behind-closed-doors game planned for this weekend. They are due at York next Thursday, and then it is off to Australia.
What sort of a team are we expecting at York?
I think it'll be pretty strong, yeah. I think you'll hopefully see certainly somebody like Rocket. What he'll do with, say, Christensen and Aronson, for example, I'm not so sure, because they'll only have just been back into training, but they have been playing through the summer with international teams, so they should be in pretty good shape. It might be Australia before you start to see what would be considered to be Marsh's first 11, but yes, at York, I think you'll see a lot of familiar faces. The interesting thing next week will obviously be Rafinha, because he's due back in on Monday. There is clearly a strong chance of a transfer involving him at some stage, but if it hasn't happened by next week, the order was to be there for July the 4th.
Interesting to see Jack Harrison's comments about pre-season training and how they've done a lot more ball work, whereas we know, like with Bielsa, it was very fitness orientated, wasn't it, when they first went back? Lots of running, triple sessions and all that.
I don't doubt there'll be some double sessions through the summer, because there always are at virtually every club, but it will be different. And it has been different since the change of head coach. You know, the training week was altered straight away just to ease off on certain days, to kind of drop the intensity slightly at various points to try and give the players a bit more rest and a bit more recuperation. This is going to be one of those really, really compelling summers where you try to work out what the plan is. I remember that with Bielsa when he came in, you know, the first friendlies that he got into with him, starting to look at the formation, starting to see what he was doing, how he was using midfielders as centre-backs and, you know, mixing everything up. This, I think, is the period where we'll all be looking to see how the formation is likely to take shape, who's likely to play where, what the grand plan of attack is.
Only 5 weeks till it all kicks off again.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Feels like 5 minutes.
Unbelievable. Do you know next season as well? It's virtually June by the time Premier League fixtures wrap up. So, I mean, literally next year, there's going to be a gap of, what, about 4 weeks or something?
I think my birthday's the day after the season finishes, so we could sort of roll the victory against Spurs into kind of Saturday night out in town.
Yeah, and, why not?
It'd be good fun. It'll be Sunday, won't it? Of course, we always finish on Sunday.
That's right, yeah, 4 o'clock.
In the Premier League, so Monday morning, staggering in and so on. Final thoughts on pre-season then. It's been bookended by a friendly at home to Cagliari at Elland Road. Sunday the 31st of July. So that's only, what, 6 days before we start the season against Wolves. Cagliari, is this a Massimo thing? Because we've played him a couple of times in pre-season.
Console yourself by thinking that could have been Luton away on that weekend.
This is quite easily.
They have been to Cagliari. They've now got Cagliari back here. I assume that this will probably be the end of the end of the relationship.
I was going to say, next season, if we do pre-season in America or something like that, it'll be a neutral ground friendly against Cagliari.
San Francisco, yeah. Something like that, yeah. But that will wrap it up at the famous kickoff time of 6 o'clock on a Sunday night.
Yep, and the new ticketing system can all be tested out, and there will be no problems with that when we hit Wolves, the old digital tickets.
Be sure to let me know.
And finally, you're looking forward to people not being able to ask you about the kits soon, because they're due to drop soonish.
That'll be good, won't it? That'll be good. I predict that some people will like it, some people will hate it, some people won't be interested in buying it, and we'll all start again next summer.
And it'll all have three stripes on the shoulders.
Probably.
Well, there you go. Unless we've got any other important business to tend to, I think that wraps it up for the Phil Hayes Show for this week. At the Phil Hayes Show on Twitter, sign up for The Athletic at theathletic.com/LeedsPod. We'll speak to you next week.
The Phil Hayes Show.